This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Violence in Mexico has spiked in 2017. The Mexican government began a crackdown on drug cartels over a decade ago that has led to one of the highest homicide rates in the world. I spoke with University of Oklahoma political scientist and Latin America expert Charlie Kenny about the security situation in Mexico. Charlie Kenny, welcome back to Worldviews.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's always great having you on the show, and I appreciate you coming in today to help us make some sense out of what's going on in Mexico. Now, you spent last academic year in Mexico as faculty in residence. I've spent some time there off and on, but obviously haven't spent as much time as you have in the country. But we see kind of a rapid deterioration, it seems like, or I guess maybe it appears to be rapid, but it sounds like maybe that this deterioration in Mexican security is kind of been long coming, long time coming, and that there are some specific things perhaps that happened maybe even 20 or so years ago that have led us to kind of where we are today in Mexico.
There is definitely a security crisis in Mexico, and it affects different segments of the population in different ways. It probably affects people who have access to greater resources less because they're able to defend themselves better through private security and such and political connections and such. So they're definitely threatened by it, but they also have a means to meet that threat. I think people who are not don't have those kind of resources are much more vulnerable.
Well, I'm going to get to this private security issue in a minute because it's really critical, and there's been much written recently about how Mexico is really becoming a place where security is a private, more and more of a private good. But let's talk about Mexico's record-breaking violence. Tens of thousands of people affected by this, and so let's kind of rewind and go back, maybe like I said, about a couple decades, about what some of the decisions were made back then regarding change in political party or parties, right? So we went from a one-party rule to multiple-party rule about 20 years ago or so ago. And we had a breakdown of cartels in Colombia and the war on drugs and drug cartels in Colombia kind of moved that competition in some ways to Mexico. And then some of the political movements that have been made, political and economic, and but particularly political movements and institutions that have developed, have weakened the state to the extent that we're seeing such tremendous violence today. So is that a fair, in a few words, what we see happening in Mexico? And can you give us some more substance about how this is really happened and how it's playing out this way?
I think it's a good starting point. I would say this, that we have to remember that illicit drug trade from Mexico has been going on for well over a century, that there were times in the past when the United States actually promoted illicit drug production in Mexico, say during World War II when we wanted the product of opium at that point, but that we have seen significant changes since the 1960s and 70s. In the 1960s in this country, and this is where we have this great complexity, but there's also some very simple things. The simplest part of the drug trade is that it's about supply and demand. So what happens in the 1960s? In the 1960s, the United States experiences an explosion in demand for illicit drugs. This affects marijuana particularly, which Mexico is a big provider of, and so we see a growth at that point. In the 1970s, we see an explosion, late 1970s, an explosion of the consumption of cocaine in the United States. And so we see a corresponding rise in drug trafficking and cocaine. So part of what we're seeing is simply the fact that Mexico lives next door to the largest drug-consuming country in the world. One of the presidents of Mexico said, living next to the United States is like living next to a crack house. The consumption takes place over there, but we get all of the negative consequences of that. With respect specifically to Colombia and such, so Colombia is the main purveyor of cocaine. All of the cocaine in the world is produced in the Andes, and it was mostly the trafficking's been dominated by the Colombians. And it shifts to Mexico from Florida. So they were shipping in through Florida. We have the Miami Vice period, and that effectively constrains the transmission of drugs. And here we have a second principle in drug trafficking, which is known as the squeeze the balloon phenomenon. It's as if you have a balloon that's only partially filled. You squeeze it in one place, and the air simply moves to a different place. So while interdiction efforts can be successful, in many different places and times, the overall flow of drugs into the United States remains more or less unchanged. So we have to compare those two things, specific interdiction success with overall flow. In this case, the flow moved to Mexico with its long border. And it wasn't long before the Mexicans figured out how to work that advantage to their success. And this happened significantly before the Colombian cartels were taken down. So it was not a product of the defeat of the cartels. It was a product of Mexican entrepreneurship, if you will, to work out a favorable deal from their side. What happened in Colombia also needs to be understood. The cartels were taken down, but they are producing more cocaine today than they ever have. All of the cocaine that comes to the United States comes out of Colombia. While there's a success in the sense of the violence has been sharply reduced, and the Colombian drug trafficking organizations have learned to cooperate and work together rather than to kill one another. So violence is much improved, greatly improved in Colombia. The drug trafficking is as strong as ever. So we don't want to confuse those two things.
But has that violence moved basically to Mexico, though, Charlie? I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine.
The violence has kind of moved to Mexico. I think that's what some are suggesting.
I'm not sure if the violence has moved there. Certainly violence has grown there. There's no question. Whether it moved, I'm not sure. But it has grown significantly. And partly because of Colombian influence. The original Colombian drug traffickers were ruthless in a way the Mexicans hadn't been, and they introduced techniques and ferocity that hadn't really been known as much before. So we do have a shift there, and we have ongoing drug violence. And this now gets to a second theme, the introduction of democracy. So democratization happens in Mexico from about 1988 on. And takes particular strength from about 1994 on. The 1994 elections were widely recognized as free and fair by the international community and local activists in Mexico. By 1997, the governing party has lost its majority, and by 2000, they lose the presidency. So it's a step-by-step process. From the early 1990s to 2006, homicides go down in Mexico. So if you have about 12 years of democratization, those first 12 years are diminishing levels of violence. Where violence kicks off and rises to the levels that we're seeing now is in 2006, and that's a matter of government policy. What the government decides to do is that they believe that the infiltration of the cartels is so strong in Mexico that it threatens the state. And they believe they have to really attack these organizations as best they can. And so that instead of living with the drug trafficking organizations, they decide to go on an all-out assault against them using military forces and others. And we have a corresponding explosion of violence in Mexico, in part by police and military forces, in part by the drug trafficking forces fighting back. But then as the government is successful in decapitating and diminishing the capability of some cartels, it then increases the competition between cartels. And it is that competition that seems to be the most responsible for present-day violence. So I would say it's government policy rather than democratization.
Some have suggested that because the cartels threaten the state, so the state reacts in a way, heavy military and police presence, but then almost kind of self-fulfilled this weakening of the state in some ways. Would you not agree? I mean, in the sense that it became very kind of heavy top-down federal government, leaving, some would suggest, local governments, local police forces out of that mix. And what filled the vacuum there were these fragmented cartels that then came in and started working with local governments and therefore affecting people in a more widespread way than they had before. Is that kind of, in some ways, this heavy-handed approach that the government took kind of created its own, weakening in some ways?
I don't know that the heavy-handed approach of the government has weakened the state. I'm not sure if there's any direct connection. The heavy-handed approach meant significant violations of human rights, the killing of a lot of innocent people. But again, it was to the extent that they were successful in diminishing the strength of particular cartels and organizations that they generated this level of competition. The penetration of drug trafficking organizations in the lowest levels of the state, in municipalities and governorships and stuff, goes back decades. I don't think that has changed greatly. What's changed is the level of violence that accompanies that. So it's not a matter of a new level of penetration controlling where there wasn't before. It's the degree of violence that accompanies that. And again, I think that's primarily because instead of having one drug trafficking organization controlling a particular region, which is the way it was before, so you just had to kill a few people and control a few people to run things, now they are contesting that territory with one or more other organizations. And it is the fight between these organizations that has generated the largest number of people being dead. That being said, we need to understand Mexico's crisis at present, both in within understanding Mexico itself. It is the worst level of violence it's ever seen. At the same time, the level of violence in Mexico, the number of homicides total in 2015 was lower than that of the United States. So what we're interested in here is not the absolute number of deaths, but the rate of homicide. And when one looks at the rate of homicide, as recently as 2015, 2016, Mexico ranked about 23rd in the world. It ranked behind Colombia, which was 15th, Brazil, which was 14th. So even recently, it's been significantly lower. It's now booming back up again. So we're in a very short-term process of a boom of violence that followed a longer-term process since 2006. It is devastating, but by no means is Mexico the worst in the region or the worst in the world. It's got some very difficult neighbors, if you will, as well.
Well, difficult neighbors meaning us. I mean, and you started this conversation with the tremendous demand that comes from the United States in terms of drugs. But I would also say there's a tremendous amount of supply that's coming from the U.S. to Mexico, and that's in weapons. Is that right?
That certainly has been the case in the past. I'm not sure if in the present that continues to be the case. But in the past, there's lots of evidence that the vast majority of weapons used in Mexico came from the United States, yes.
So this just adds to this complexity of the violent nature of this interaction in Mexico. But you said short-term problem. All right. So we've set this up now to where you've very nicely explained kind of how we can view this issue in context, not only in Mexico, but in it's in the region and around the world. But you mentioned short term. Now, we just also discussed how security is becoming more and more of a private good. I mean, when you go there, you see that there are private security guards everywhere, that there are private, gated neighborhoods more and more. People are paying for their own security now because they can't count on the state to be able to secure them. So this is short term. You said it's a short-term problem. What is Mexico doing? What are we doing? What needs to be done in order to make sure that this is a short-term problem, that these cartels will eventually, I guess, work this out? And what do you expect to happen from here?
Yeah, I think I first need to correct myself because I did say short-term, and I think that gives the wrong impression. I don't think it's short-term. What I meant to say is that as recently as 2 years ago, the murder rate was 16 per 100,000, and now it's 24 more recently. So there's a very recent burst, if you will, something like what we see in Chicago, a very recent extreme burst. Whether that's short term or not, I don't know. It may last a long time. And it is building upon things that have been happening since 2006. So it is not short term. That's really a misstatement on my part. The long-term consequences, the long-term issues do have to do with supply and demand. If there is no reduction in demand, it's unrealistic to expect a reduction in supply. And any policies that are designed primarily to cut off supply without really dealing with demand are not going to work. So I think that's kind of the bottom line about where we need to go.
So that's what the United States needs to deal with, obviously, is to work on the supply. And then from the Mexican perspective, what do they need to do?
The Mexican perspective, I think, is a very difficult one over the long term. I think that what we're dealing with in Mexico is very deep traditions of corruption that have dominated the political system. That tradition was extremely evident, very strongly evident during the years of the pre-government. The move to democracy is not when this became a problem. This was a huge problem under the pre, and it has turned out to continue to be a huge problem under more competitive circumstances. And reducing that is difficult, and I don't have an easy answer as to how one really gets at that.
Well, Mexico will be having elections coming up soon next year, and so we'll be watching that. And I'm sure we'll be having another conversation about this, Charlie. So thanks again for being here, as always.
Thank you.
You've been listening to my conversation with Charlie Kenny. He's a political scientist at the University of Oklahoma. Worldviews is produced in partnership between KGOU and the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Katie Holland prepares our research, Jacob McClellan edited this interview, and Sam Dupre produced the show. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Gorlott.